My name is Ted Burns, and I'm Senior Director of Political Affairs and RADPAT for the American College of Radiology Association, and I want to welcome you to our Radvocacy podcast hosted by RADPAT. Our goal with the podcast is to give you a behind-the-scenes look into the various advocacy efforts of the college, our members, and insights from political influencers here in Washington, D.C.
Hey, this is Ted Burns, Senior Director of Political Affairs and RADPAT for the American College of Radiology. And today we are doing our first podcast in 2026. We are honored to have with us today a guest who has a very accomplished background in radiology and business, and now a strong desire to serve his community and country, Dr. Sam McGowan. Welcome to our Radvocacy podcast. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me here today. I'm looking forward to it.
Of course. So let's start first off, kind of your background. Many of our listeners may not know who you are, and we'll certainly get into why you are our guest for the first podcast this year. But first, tell us about, you know, why you decided to get into a career of medicine, where you did your clinical training, subspecialty, and then where you ended up practicing for your career.
Okay. Yeah. Well, for starters, when I was young, I feel like we all have life events that changes forever. And for me, it was when I was 10 years old. My sister Fran was a loving, active, healthy 14-year-old, and she suddenly got sick and ended up in the hospital. And they wanted to put her in the ICU, but they couldn't because it was full. And she ended up being on a regular hospital bed. And we think she died when she had an allergic reaction to penicillin. So it was a very traumatic event for me and the family, of course. And I didn't have any family in medicine at the time or anything like that, but it was one of the events that led me to a career in medicine. I didn't have a lot of confidence going to college that I could get in med school because I always heard it was so hard to get in. And it was good in numbers and math, and I figured I'd have a better chance if I did something math-based. So I did mechanical engineering undergraduate, but always planned to go into medicine. And I got lucky, and I got accepted to medical school, and then got into Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston and trained there in residency and fellowship as well, radiology, diagnostic radiology course, and then a nuclear medicine fellowship and MRI.
Now, was fellowship just kind of becoming a thing when you were starting your career, or had that been going around for a while?
No. Yeah, everybody had the opportunity to do fellowships, and probably half the people went to fellowship, and I would say half just went straight into work afterwards. It was the exact time when, because radiology used to be it used to be 4 years, and some programs offered it with an intern year, so it'd be 5 years. It was right at the time they were switching over. I kind of slid into the door, so I was able to do the four-year program without the intern year.
Got it. So let's kind of introduce you to our audience here. Like I said, many may not have known your name. Hopefully they will come to know it very well over the next few months and years to come, for that matter. You have decided that you would like to run for Congress in South Carolina's first congressional district, which is an open seat that is being vacated by Congresswoman Nancy Mace. And so I think probably my first reaction when I heard the news a few months ago and right before we first talked, and I would assume also the people listening would want to know, what the heck are you doing? Why would you want to run for Congress, especially the way things are now, is so divisive and such kind of like a hot thing? Tell us kind of about your decision, you know, why you wanted to do this, the timing of it, and running in particular for that seat.
Well, I'm a doctor. My wife's a doctor. My daughter's in medical school, and we sit around the table and talk medicine to the extent that annoys our sons. And in medicine, it just seems like you want to treat patients, and so much of the time you run into interference, and in life as well, from government issues, and we complain about them a lot. And, you know, sometimes you get to the point where you're like, well, you can't keep complaining about it if you're not going to try to do something about it. So I love our country. I was born in the greatest country on earth, the best time in history. I didn't have to go to war to fight for my freedom or anything. I've been blessed by the opportunities in this country. So, you know, and Christ said in the Bible, too much is given, much is expected. So I'm kind of a financial problem solver as it is from all my business and entrepreneurial experience. So, you know, my wife and I talked about it. We talked to family and friends about it and prayed a lot about it. And like my wife says, the people like us don't do it, the kind of people you end up with in Congress. So, felt like it's an obligation and something to have a skill set for.
So obviously this is a big step and a big change career-wise from, you know, practicing as well as being in business. So far from when you've announced to now, kind of just talk about some of the biggest hurdles you've experienced, maybe, you know, things that are a surprise for you, like, oh, I didn't realize running for Congress was going to require me to do this, or this is actually something I really have come to enjoy about running for Congress. Kind of just walk us through a little bit about the early parts of this journey that you're on in your congressional candidacy.
Kind of reminds me of when I switched from engineering to medicine. I think when in engineering, you analyze everything. And in medicine, you know, in medical school, there's a lot of memorization. And I either made an F or a D on my first two tests in med school. And I looked around and said, I can do this. I just can't, you know, I had to reassess things. And I realized I was just studying all wrong. So you have to train yourself to think differently and study differently. Same thing here. I've never run for office before. I've been on served on a lot of boards. So, you know, hospital boards, charitable, homeless shelter organizations and stuff like that. But this is a totally new experience. I'm, you know, running against some career politicians that have run campaigns before and have campaign staff and know how it works. So I'm just, you know, each day learn a little bit more about the ropes. I've always loved to learn. And it's just another learning experience for me, another challenge. And I like a good challenge.
You know, it's interesting. You kind of make reference to the fact that some of the other candidates in this, what we would call a pretty crowded primary field, have kind of electoral background. You know, they've been elected to local office, whether it's in the state legislature or maybe city council or whatever it may be. And, you know, with that comes some inherent advantages of, hey, I know how to run a campaign. I've been on a ballot before. I kind of understand the ebbs and flows of it. But there's also some disadvantages. I would assume that your area is not that different from a lot of other areas where people are like, the best thing I want is a career politician. I'm tired of career politicians. So I would think, well, in a way, being a first-time candidate may be a disadvantage as you're kind of learning the ropes and recalibrating kind of how you approach things. It's also a huge advantage because you're coming at it from a completely different perspective than these folks were almost on an autopilot type of campaign mode. I don't know if that's something that you want to talk about or if it's something you would just agree with, or maybe you disagree with, I don't know. But I would think that it would be probably a net positive for you being a first-time candidate or someone who's not a career politician.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how every now and then you run into people that think, oh, well, you don't have any experience in politics. Don't you think those people are better? And it's like, well, do you think the system's working right now? And they usually say no. It's okay, well,
right.
Maybe I can't do any worse, but I hope I can do better. I think it's maybe the difference between sympathy and empathy. You know, it's sympathy if you have an experience with empathy, I think is a much more knowledge to feelings because you've experienced them. So just like, you know, had serious losses as a child, losing my sister, I was able to empathize with patients better. And I think been through medicine and see, you know, the burdens of regulation, even when they're well-intended and what doctors have to deal with trying to get reimbursement. And most doctors I know they want to spend more time with their patients and less with paperwork. And we all want to give better and better quality. So like if you're not, you know, moving forward, you're falling behind, right?
Yeah.
When I went to my medical practice, the PAC systems were just coming out. I helped pick out the PAC system for our hospital. I helped pick out our first PET scanner for the hospital. I did the first retiroplasty at the hospital. And it's just one thing after another, helped set up cardiac CT at the hospital. It's all been an adventure. And I think not being a politician, a career politician, will help me, especially more in service. I never hear people serving that say, oh, yeah, well, he's from business, though. He's not doing a good job as a public servant. We all want to serve people, serve our patients, serve our citizens, and try to make the world a better place and work towards a common good.
Well, you know, from our perspective, which obviously is a very selfish perspective from the lens of medicine and more specifically radiology, you know, when you look at the composition of Congress, you've got 535 members between the House and the Senate. You have 19 of them are provider backgrounds, that they were an MD. So that really equates to about 4% of Congress has a legitimate healthcare background. So, you know, bringing that expertise that you have from a clinical perspective, from a business perspective, having to make a bunch of decisions, you know, as part of your practice, that comes with a great amount of responsibility and experience and expertise that I would think if you get elected to Congress, a lot of your peers would find very useful for them who don't have that understanding and background. I mean, we used to always joke that, you know, the most that members of Congress knew about healthcare was Obamacare good or Obamacare bad, depending on what side of the aisle they were. And that was about it. And it's, you know, it's kind of tongue in cheek. It's really almost the truth. And you have, you know, most members of Congress who are relying on a 27-year-old kid, essentially, who is their staffer to tell them what they should do on the healthcare issue, when healthcare routinely is the top three issue in the country, and it impacts every single voter every single day, you know, whether it's access, whether it's affordability, whatever the case may be. And so I don't know if that's something you kind of want to touch upon. You know, you've already talked to just recently this week, a member of Congress who is one of those 19, Congressman John Joyce. You've spoken to him and just kind of getting a feel for what it would be like to be a member of Congress with that healthcare background.
Yeah, Congressman Joyce was great. He really is passionate about medicine and bringing his knowledge from the healthcare field to try to help on the Doctors Caucus in Congress. And I want to do the same thing. South Carolina hadn't had a doctor in Congress, from what I can tell, for over 200 years. So I want to be South Carolina's doctor in the House. I don't think we've ever had a radiologist in the House of Representatives, from what I can tell.
We have not.
You know, I was the one that, you know, when I was even new with my group, I was the one that negotiated contracts with insurance companies. I did certain negotiations with the hospital. And when you're picking out equipment for procedures, you have to negotiate and research that kind of stuff. And so it's all life experiences that we build upon. And we know how difficult the payer system can be. And I just want to bring all that knowledge to serving the people. And I look forward to being in the Doctors Caucus and that.
Now, so as you would imagine, we have within the ACR membership, probably the entire political spectrum represented by our individual members of the college, right? We've got people who are very, you know, adamantly in support of policies that you would say maybe are on the left side of the spectrum and equally the case on the right side of the spectrum. And with everything being so, like I said, so divisive right now, kind of, you know, how would you say, you know, if someone's like, yeah, you sound like a good guy and you've got a background in radiology and you're probably going to go to Congress for the right reasons. You know, you're taking a pay cut to go and you're going in immediately. Half of the people in your community are probably going to dislike you because you have a party label to your name. But yeah, I want to give you the benefit of the doubt, but I'm a Democrat and you're a Republican. And so like, how do you kind of envision like kind of threading that needle between, you know, you obviously have your own principles of what you believe and feel passionately about from a policy perspective, but also like, hey, when I was a radiologist and I'm looking at imaging and doing, you know, interpretations, I'm not worried if the patient's a Republican or Democrat. I'm worried about giving them the best care that they need regardless, you know. And is there like, I guess maybe that perspective is helpful as you're trying to figure out, you know, putting patients, putting the provider perspective over partisanship, I guess.
Absolutely. You know, of course, I never ask my patients their political party or their religion or anything like that. You know, if a policy is good, I'm going to support it no matter who it comes from. And within my practice, we had Democrats and Republicans, and you've got to agree to disagree. But I think mistakes people make is try to find a cure or fix for tomorrow, and we don't look at a patient and always have a super cure. You know, we know treatments are going to take months or even years. And I think the way to do it is you look for common goals, what your goal is a long way out, and then try to work backwards and find solutions that work for everybody. Try to find a consensus. Martin Luther King said something to the fact that tomorrow's challenges are here today, so we've got to act with urgency. And healthcare is becoming a bigger and bigger issue every year, it seems like.
And the one thing I will say, which is an interesting dynamic, you know, if you look at, for instance, going back to Congressman John Joyce, who's a Republican, he's, you know, head of the Doc Caucus, which is a group of Republican physician members in the House. His classmate was also a physician on the Democrat side of the aisle in the House named Kim Schreier from Washington State. And if you hear Dr. Joyce talk, almost every time when he's talking in the physician community, he'll reference his relationship with Dr. Schreier. He's like, hey, we came in at the same time. I'm a Republican. She's a Democrat. But we have that commonality of being a provider. We understand what it's like and that responsibility to be a provider and to treat patients and to understand, you know, affordability in healthcare and access in healthcare and all these types of issues. And the Democrats are now building kind of their own version of a Doc Caucus in the House. Dr. Joyce and Dr. Schreier talk quite a bit. And he said, you know, you would be surprised, as much as you would think on an issue like healthcare, and there's so many different ways to to approach it, he's like, we have a lot more in common than people would guess. And he said that type of commonality really allows them more than anything just to have a dialogue. And he said that's really like the first step. We can have a conversation. We're doing much better than the remaining part of Congress who doesn't even try, right? And so I think, you know, you make a really good point. Like, it's such an important issue. You have to be open to looking at, you know, what the goals are, regardless of the partisanship, and then how you work backwards to achieve those goals, kind of for the greater good. One of the things that I believe is also in your background, in addition to, you know, when you were practicing, as well as, you know, going into the business world, you also have been president of the MUSC Medical Association alumni, is that right?
That's right, the Medical University of South Carolina Alumni Association. I'm the president of it currently.
And so how does like, what's that entail, and what's been the kind of results of your engagement with them as far as just, you know, building the network and, you know, understanding what is important to the needs of that community and how you can be a resource for that?
Yeah, well, MUSC is the main tertiary care center for the state. So probably more doctors in the state, of course, train there than anywhere else. But, you know, and it's also, MUSC is also building its network throughout the state to try to provide better care. So there's, of course, friction between local hospitals and MUSC's expansion. Our goal is to provide quality and affordable health care to the citizens of South Carolina. And as president of the Alumni Association, that's what we do, is network with people across the state to try to keep them involved and knowledgeable of what's going on with MUSC and keep people connected. I think the more people stay connected, the more communication is. That's how you work and solve problems together.
That's great. Well, so I don't know if there's anything else you want to kind of talk briefly about your race. You know, I don't think we have to get, you know, too much into the weeds, because obviously things are very fluid and there's always so many different dynamics. But the primary is in early June.
Because I'm the only one in the race that's a political outsider, a doctor, a businessman, an entrepreneur. I've just been blessed by my opportunities. I think I have more success and experience across more different industries than anyone else in the race. And I just, you know, want to bring my abilities to serving our country.
And then with the primary, we said there's probably, you know, two tiers, if you will, maybe the kind of the top five candidates that are there, and then maybe a second tier of other folks who are announced and maybe not, you know, as likely to be in that top five, or maybe they're interested but haven't officially announced as a candidate or whatever the case may be. So you have kind of two groupings, if you will. But how does it work? You have the primary in June. Is it the primary winner is, you know, 50+1, or is it like the plurality wins? Is there a runoff?
It's not a plurality. It's okay. You have to have 50+1. So as long as you have 50% plus one, then you win. In a race like this, there's a good chance there'll be a runoff. South Carolina, I think, has the shortest runoffs I've been told of anyone else in the country. We have 2 weeks. So it's,
wow.
You've got to kind of be prepared for the runoff before the runoff gets here if it's going to happen.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then
I've got, like I said, a lot of challengers. I take everybody seriously and I try to listen to them. I enjoy getting to know them and learning their backgrounds as well.
Yeah. And then obviously you've got the general election in November and, you know, you kind of first things first, right? You win the primary. Hopefully you don't need a runoff, but if you do, then you win that. And then you've got a few months to kind of then recover and get ready for the general election, which is nice. It's not like a late primary, like in August, and then you have to almost snap your fingers and turn around and run again in the general. Well, so we obviously are going to keep a very close eye on this race. We've already supported your candidacy and we're happy to do so. I know that you've got plans to come up to DC and meet with more physician members of Congress to kind of learn a little bit more about what they've been able to accomplish and what are some of their needs, and having someone like you also join the ranks. And so we're looking forward to helping you along with that process. Also, kind of just to get to know you a little bit more on a personal level, we always finish our podcasts with what we would call kind of a lightning round of questions. So this is aimed to be, you know, relatively short, quick answers. There's been times in the past when we've done these where the answer is so surprising, I can't help but jump in and say something about someone's favorite, you know, activity or food or travel or whatever the case may be. I will be curious to see your answer to the first one, because we're on the hot streak here. And if your answer is the same, then we really need to do some investigations into what that might be. But we'll start off with favorite food.
Favorite food. Well, although I try to eat healthy, I will say my favorite, I love food. My favorite food is chocolate. but also love pizza and Thai food as well.
Okay. So thankfully, we just missed the investigative need, because I would say like the last four or five guests were all ice cream. And I thought you were going down that road when you said, I like to eat healthy, but I said, oh, here's another ice cream coming. Watch. Okay. So I'm sure you still enjoy ice cream. Everyone seems to.
I love ice cream, but I can live without it. I can't live without chocolate. Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. Favorite place to travel?
Well, I'm in the Lowcountry of South Carolina, and my family, we love the boat, and there's nothing like the waterways of South Carolina. And you can go out into areas that you can not see civilization at all and just listen to the wildlife and see your surroundings and the marsh grass and the rivers. I love it. Outside the state, you know, I love the mountains and I love the hike. So I do a lot of hiking as well.
Great. I will say selfishly, this isn't the reason why, you know, we're so interested in your race, but Hilton Head, I believe, is part of your congressional district, which happens to be where I got married, where my family vacations every year. And so there is that selfish element as well. So I'll say, hey, if you get elected, I'm going to come down and visit you in the district all the time.
Yep.
Favorite hobby? So this would be, obviously, running for Congress should not be included in this, but what would be, you know, things you'd like to do? You kind of alluded to hiking, other things that you like to do on your spare time.
Yeah, you know, like I said, like to hang out with the family. We do a lot of boating. I even do a little wake surfing. That's summertime. My wintertime hobby would be snow skiing. I'm a snow ski addict as well.
Great, but not snowboarding, right?
Snowboard. Yep. Yeah.
Good. And then the last one that we always end with. We call it favorite saying. So this could be, you know, a well-known quote. Or this could be something that you kind of have made up or used just in your own family as kind of just something that you guys randomly came up with and stuck. So favorite saying or thing that you're known to say on a pretty frequent basis.
I'm going to give you two if you don't mind.
Sure.
I never quote it perfectly right, but my mom had a plaque outside the door or kitchen door when I was growing up, and I never understood it until I got older, but it's Lord help me to accept the things that I cannot change, to change the things I can, and to know the difference in between. And as I get older, I try to apply that to more and more things in life, because life's never going to be perfect, and some people bang their heads against the wall trying to change things they can't. And some people think, you know, it's like you said at the beginning of the podcast, you know, why are you going to Congress? And my friends all give me one or two reactions, either, wow, you'd be great, I'm glad you're doing it, or, you know, what the heck are you thinking? Profanity in there, and you know, you have such a great life. Why would you want to go do that to yourself? But it's a sense of obligation and giving back. And my favorite quoted saying, though, I would say is from Thomas Jefferson, where he said, I predict future happiness for Americans if they can prevent the government from wasting the labors of the people under the pretense of taking care of them.
Okay, good.
Which takes a little bit of thought and makes you think as well. So.
Yeah, and it's funny. It's funny you've referenced this a couple of times throughout the podcast. We had the last time we had a radiologist run a very good, viable race was back in 2018, named Dr. Steve Ferrara, who was an interventional radiologist. And his whole big thing, kind of like his life mantra, which again, you've referenced several times here, is like, he's like, his dad told him, he's like, you can't complain unless you have an actual solution for what you're complaining about. And he's like, that's how he lived. And so he said he got to a point where he's like, okay, well, my only solution right now is to run for office, because there's stuff I want to complain about, but I can't do anything about it unless I'm in Congress and I can actually change some of the things that, you know, were frustrating to him. So it's very similar type of mindset and wiring that, like, if you're going to get into this business, and it's a pretty tough business, I'm sure you've already learned already, you know, you have to be pretty dedicated to the fact that, like, hey, I'm doing this for the right reasons. I'm doing this for kind of something larger than just me. And that's something that I think a lot of people, regardless of where they are politically, I think people respect the fact that someone's willing to put themselves out there and really make that type of commitment, because it's not easy at all, as I'm sure you've experienced already.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. I love his attitude towards that. I've been on a lot of boards where people come and want to complain on the board for other people to do things. And I, on some boards, I've made a rule, you know, you can't complain unless you have a solution to propose.
Yep.
Or you're willing to step up and do the work.
Anything else you want before we close the podcast to say about your race and just kind of, you know, obviously your background? for our listeners to know?
I would say thanks for having me. I appreciate you having me here. I go to Sam McCown, MCCOWN, sammccown.com to learn more. And I look forward to talking again. Anybody have any questions, please tell me how I can be a better public servant. I'd appreciate it. And again, I'm the only one with the political outsider and a doctor and entrepreneur in the race.
Well, we appreciate you throwing your hat in the ring, and we are very excited to see how this progresses. And obviously, like I said, we're happy to support your candidacy. And we will certainly be in touch. We will certainly make sure that the people who are listening to this know how to get to your website and learn more and maybe even get involved in your campaign. And look forward to being on this journey with you together. So thank you for your time and wish you the best of luck during the race.
Thank you, Ted.